Welcome to A Dose of the Healthy Truth podcast with Dr. Cecil Bennett. Learn more about this podcast and other episodes at cecilbennettmd.com. Now here's Dr. Bennett.
Welcome back to part two of my COVID podcast. I did receive some feedback from the first podcast. I guess one of the greatest concerns that people had was, why are you beating up on the president? Why are you beating up on the CDC director? And, you know, my response is that, you know, I live this pandemic every day with my patients. I have patients that have been with me for quite a long time, and they're confused. They don't know where to go to get the vaccine. I have no place to send them. There are those who are skeptical about taking the vaccine, so I have to deal with those issues. And, you know, I believe really the purpose of a citizen is to always question government. I mean, whether you agree or disagree with their policies, it is still our responsibilities as Americans to make sure that the best policies are presented, which is why, again, I stress the need for more primary care physicians to be involved with this vaccine distribution process. I listened to a broadcast again today from the leaders of the COVID vaccine rollout. And again, primary care doctors are excluded. They talk about pharmacies. They talk about, you know, Walmart being involved now and some other private locations. But again, nothing about primary care providers. So I'm going to keep hammering that point home until someone actually listens and allow primary care providers to actually vaccinate America. And just by the numbers, 75% of all Americans have a primary care provider. How easy would it be to just send the vaccine to us and we vaccinate our patients? It would all be done in 8 to 10 weeks. One thing I'm glad, though, is that the governor of the state of Georgia, Governor Kemp, has decided to vaccinate teachers and making teachers a priority, which is great. I said earlier that Walmart is now involved in the process of vaccinating America. And one of the questions I saw posed to the CEO of Walmart was, well, will his staff get vaccinated? And he said, well, he hopes so. So here we can have a plan to vaccinate the staff of Walmart, but there's no national plan to vaccinate teachers. It just makes no sense to me. But I'm glad our governor took the bull by the horns and has made an executive decision to vaccinate teachers. I mean, they're a vital resource to our country. There's no getting around that. I mean, to me, they're as important as any frontline provider is during the time of this pandemic. Why would we not want to make them go back to a safe environment? Why wouldn't we want them to have peace of mind? You know, initially the CDC put out these guidelines of what they expect to take place in schools for schools to open safely and why teachers would not need to be vaccinated if these guidelines were put in place. They wanted to make sure that 90% of everyone had a mask, of the school had a mask. They wanted to make sure that, you know, there were testing sites set up, that there were sanitation areas, that classrooms could be cleaned on a regular basis during the day. And they wanted to overhaul the ventilation system. If all these things were put in place, then teachers can go back to school safely. Schools can't afford to buy books. How are they going to afford to put all these mitigation steps the CDC wants in place before teachers would feel safe to go back to school? It just made no sense whatsoever. Schools are not buying books. Teachers are buying supplies for their students. And we expect 90% of the school systems to be able to comply with these mitigation standards, to overhaul the entire ventilation system of a school. That's just crazy. But again, I got to give props to our governor. He stepped up and he's going to vaccinate teachers from K through 12, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, because let's face facts, virtual learning was just not working very well for many communities, particularly, again, poorer communities that did not have consistent internet access. And what about working mothers? I mean, think about what working mothers went through during this time of pandemic. They have their children to take care of. They have to go to work. And now they dealt with virtual learning. I just don't know how they did it. I mean, I think they're absolutely remarkable. And as far as teachers getting vaccinated, why wouldn't we want to make sure they're vaccinated? Why wouldn't we want them to have the peace of mind of knowing that they are safe and their family is safe? I'll compare it to when I was vaccinated. You know, I went a year without, you know, wearing a mask with my patients and examining patients and talking to patients in a little room. And I'll be honest with you, I was worried. I mean, I was worried that there is a possibility that, you know, someone wasn't wearing their mask properly, or, you know, while I'm examining someone, if I'm, you know, asking them to open their mouth and stick out their tongue, they can't be wearing a mask, right? So I have to look in their throat, and that's the point where, you know, I'd get the full effect of the virus if any of them were positive. You know, I had to deal with that for a year, but it was necessary because, again, you know, that's what I do as a family physician. After I got vaccinated, I felt so much better. You know, I was protected now. Now I could see my patients, I could interact with my patients, and I had peace of mind that at least I was vaccinated. Why shouldn't teachers have the same peace of mind when dealing with our children? Why don't we want them to feel comfortable with going around children that may be, you know, sniffling or runny nose or having some other issue, but the teacher needs to be close to them to make a point or to help them? Why would we want the teachers to have peace of mind during that time and be vaccinated? Again, all props to our governor for stepping up and doing that. And, you know, one final thing I say about teachers is that, you know, my daughter is a teacher. She's a proud University of Georgia graduate. She got her bachelor's degree in, I think it was, middle school education. And she went on, she's now a counselor at a middle school she's a counselor at an elementary school. I keep getting that wrong. In Griffin, Georgia. And she loves her job. And I'm sure she's excited about going back to school. And I'm sure she's even more excited over the fact that she will be vaccinated. That's great. One thing we keep hearing, too, is, you know, we need to go with the science. You know, we need to listen to the scientists. Well, let me ask you something. What does that mean? What does that really mean? Listen to the scientists. You know, I've gone to several medical conferences in my life, and I can tell you that, you know, a lot of those conferences are knockdown, drag out events with different opinions on various topics. We don't all agree about how to treat patients. We don't agree about, you know, certain diagnoses. We don't agree about several things when it comes to science and medicine. But that's fine. We're allowed to disagree and people make their points. But it's really annoying to me when I keep hearing, well, we need to listen to the scientists. Well, scientists differ in their belief systems. Some scientists believe right now we've got herd immunity. Sometimes some scientists believe we'll never achieve herd immunity because the virus keeps changing. Some scientists feel the worst is behind us. Other scientists are saying, well, no, there's a surge coming that we have to worry about. So, you know, just when you hear, listen to the scientists, just let it go in one ear and go out the other, because we all differ in what we believe. It's just a matter of listening to all the information and making an informed decision. And an example, again, is Governor Kemp. He listened to what the CDC said about mitigation standards. He realized that that would pretty much be impossible for the majority of schools to follow. He realized that parents had to go back to work. He realized that virtual learning would not be the best way to continue to educate our children. And what was the best solution? Immunize our teachers. That's using the science and using all the information that's available to make an informed leadership decision. There's a lot changing, too, with the virus, as you know. You keep hearing about this word variants, and a lot of people get confused about what a variant is, what it means, etc. Well, variants are mutations or changes to the gene structure, usually on the outside of the shell. There are these things called spike proteins that stick off the virus, and those things change. And when they change, the body doesn't recognize these changes, and we're not able to defeat the virus in some cases, depending on how dramatic the changes are. Fortunately, the mutations that are currently of concern, i.e. the UK variant, the South African variant, and the Brazilian variant, seem to be susceptible to the vaccine, which is great, the current vaccine. But let's talk about the variants for a minute, because, again, as I said before, you can have mild variations in the surface proteins. You can have moderate modifications. You can have severe modifications. With mild modifications or moderate changes, the vaccine would be effective. But what are we finding now in terms of the changes when it comes to the UK variant? we're finding out that those changes to the surface actually means that there are more people who are more susceptible or who can actually be infected with the virus. So think of it as being a little bit more sticky. Imagine if I threw a whole bunch of, you know, ping pong balls on a table. And on some of those ping pong balls, I had one piece of tape that was that allowed the two-sided tape that allowed the ping pong ball to stick to the table. And on other balls, I had like six or seven different pieces of two-sided tape. If I threw them all on the table, the ones with that were more sticky would stay on the table. So it's the same thing when we look at these variants. The UK variant seems to be more sticky, meaning that if you're exposed to it, it sticks in your nasal passage longer than the common virus that we're currently dealing with in the United States. And the longer it stays around, the more sticky it is the more likelihood it's going to be more contagious. And they do realize they have found out that 70% of there's a 70% increase in this UK variant infecting someone else. So that's a concern. I mean, 70%, you know, more contagious is a problem. That's 70% more people likely to get COVID if they're exposed to someone with the UK variant. What's also concerning with the UK variant is that they're not absolutely certain that there isn't increased mortality with it. There's increased morbidity, but they don't know about increased mortality. Now, increased morbidity means illness, means being, you know, sick with a disease process. That's morbidity. Increased mortality means death from a particular illness. And right now, the jury's still out as to whether or not the UK variant actually will cause more death than the US version of it. Now, why is this a concern? Well, we now know, and it's expected, that the UK variant may actually become the dominant strain of the virus in the United States by the end of March. That's very concerning. Because you're dealing with a virus now that's more contagious and maybe even more deadly than the current strain that's in the United States. This is why we need to get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. When you're vaccinated, it removes you from the equation. You don't have to worry about the UK variant. Don't have to worry about any other variant because you're vaccinated. You're safe. I'm not saying 100% certain that there isn't a possibility that you may get some mild disease in the future from some variant or some change in the virus. But for the most part, you're safe. When we're looking at the different vaccines, there are different options. And let me just say this in general when it comes to vaccines. And I've said this over and over again. We need to get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. It does not matter which vaccine you get. It is more important to be vaccinated. That is the critical thing that needs to happen. Now, what are the different types of vaccines that are out there? Well, we know there's a Pfizer vaccine, a Moderna vaccine. Those are really the more common ones that we've come accustomed to. Those are two-dose vaccines. So basically, you get your first dose, and 3 to 4 weeks later, you get your second dose to be able to get the full immunization of the vaccine. Now, let's be clear about something. The efficacy rate of the Pfizer-Moderna vaccine was touted to be 95%, okay? That's 95% of individuals who were not either from South Africa or from Brazil or were not included in the UK variant. Now, why is that important? Well, there's a newer vaccine out there now, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And that vaccine is coming back at about 65 to 75, somewhere in that ballpark of efficacy. And people are concerned, well, no, I want the one that's 95% effective. I don't want this Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But hold on there. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine was tested on patients in the UK or in Brazil and also in the UK that may have experienced those variants. So that's why their efficacy was not as high as the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, if you think through the process, okay? But let's also know this, that anyone who's gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they may develop a mild form of COVID or a moderate form of COVID, but there were no hospitalizations, no severe disease, and no death. And really, that's the bottom line, is that getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may not have the same efficacy as Pfizer and Moderna. But again, we're talking about apples and oranges, because who knows what the efficacy of Pfizer and Moderna would be if they were tested against the UK, the South African and Brazilian strain. We don't know. But we do know that with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, there has been no hospitalizations or death reported. So that's fantastic news. Plus, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is one dose. One and you're done, where Moderna and Pfizer are two doses. So for people who are skeptical about being vaccinated, it'll be great to get that one shot of Johnson & Johnson vaccine into their arm as soon as possible. But even with Pfizer and Moderna, even though they're two doses, it is critical that we get as many people vaccinated quickly. So when you look at the science, and again, this is where science, scientists vary. You know, the studies were done saying, it's 2 to 3 weeks and you have to get that second dose in the third or fourth week, or, that's when the studies were done. But let's, cool our jets here a little bit. There have been other studies to show that similar vaccines, another vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine, was still effective after the second dose was still effective after 12 weeks. So we may have done the studies on the vaccine second dose at 3 to 4 weeks, but there's other data available that tells us that if we waited a few more weeks, it's not the end of the world. And why is that important? I would rather more people get vaccinated and using that second dose that was supposed to be given to someone who already got the first dose, and then letting that first set of people wait a few more weeks, than to fully vaccinate a group of people and have another group that's not vaccinated at all. That is just not a good plan. But the bottom line is, whatever vaccine you can get, you need to get. Now, I heard something as well, and I assume it's true because I've heard it through multiple, media outlets, that 50% of seniors are vaccinated. And that's great. But I don't know what 50% that is, because I have a whole bunch of senior patients. And I can guarantee you that nowhere close to 50% of those patients are vaccinated. They don't even know where to go to get the vaccine. I have about 900 Medicare patients, and I can guarantee you 450 of them have not been vaccinated yet. I check with some of my peers and ask them, 50% of your seniors been vaccinated? And their response is no. So, I don't know where this 50% is coming from for these seniors, but, it ain't coming from South Georgia. That much I can tell you. Let's move on to another point here when it comes to conspiracy and skepticism. I've heard them all from my patients. I'm going to go through some of the let's talk about skepticism first, okay, where people are saying, well, they rushed the vaccine and, I want to wait. That's what, they rushed the vaccine, so I want to wait to see how effective it's going to be or if anyone gets sick. For which my response is, so would you rather get COVID while you're waiting? I mean, what makes better sense, to get the vaccine and go with the science? Now, I'm actually going to go with the science on this one that says you will be protected, or to wait to see what happens? And the truth is, I've had patients who have waited because they were skeptical, and they and their family have come down with COVID. Some of them serious disease requiring hospitalization. So I would strongly suggest, if you have an opportunity to get the vaccine, even though you're skeptical, trust me, you're better off being vaccinated than not being vaccinated and placing yourself at risk. So that's the skeptical people when it comes to the vaccine. But what about the conspiracy theories? Now, I'm going to tell you real conspiracy theories that people have told me. Okay, so these are not made up. These are people, some of my patients, and I won't use any names. because that would be unethical among other issues. But, I had one patient that said, well, I saw on the internet that, when you get the vaccine, there are these little nanograms or something that the government put in the vaccine where they can track you. And that's the whole thing, is that now the government's going to track you with these little nanograms or nano, I don't know what it is, some nano something or whatever. And you can be tracked that way. That's why they want to do it. That's not true. So let's just move on to the, think about how complicated that would be. I mean, first of all, I think we would have heard of this nanotechnology sometime in the past if it actually existed, and it wouldn't be rolled out in a made-up pandemic to all of a sudden be able to control people, know where they are. But, you know, we'll table that one. Another one I've heard is that, well, this is all the Bill Gates thing. And, you know, Bill Gates is involved in vaccines, and this is a way for him to make more money from vaccines. Let's talk about Bill Gates for a second. This is an individual who has decided to donate all the money he's made in his life to mankind. Tens of billions of dollars. This is a man that has changed the process of disease on continents, affecting AIDS, affecting hepatitis, affecting malaria, affecting water access. I mean, incredible the projects that the Gates Foundation has done when it comes to the world population. I don't think Bill Gates is sitting around worrying about making more money from you. I just don't think that's at the top of his agenda. I mean, it's just me, but you know, who am I to think any differently? Another thing I've heard, you know, from some African-American patients is that, you know, this is just something to experiment with black people again. And, you know, we know what happened in Tuskegee, and, you know, we don't want that to happen again to us. And we're just going to be experimented on. And that's why they want us to get vaccinated. All right. So let me clarify this whole Tuskegee thing, because there's a lot of misinformation about this Tuskegee experiment and what it actually was. In the 1930s. In Alabama, there was a study that was put together by the Public Health Department and the CDC to look at what happens in an asymptomatic African-American male who had syphilis. So in normal language, they were looking at people or African-American men who had syphilis who didn't have any symptoms of it. No sign of it whatsoever, completely asymptomatic, and wanted to see what that would do to their bodies over time. Did it affect their heart? Did it affect their liver? Did it affect their lungs? Did it affect their skin? Did it affect their brain? Now, initially in 1932, there was no cure for syphilis. So basically, it's just following a disease process, which would not be unethical. But in the mid-1940s, penicillin was discovered. And penicillin is proven to be very effective against syphilis. As a matter of fact, we still use it today to treat syphilis. But the Public Health Department and the CDC decided that they would not treat the 400 African-American men that had syphilis. They would continue them in the study without treatment. That is unethical. That is immoral, among other things. So they continue to follow these men without treating them. Not for 10 years, not for 20 years, not for 30 years, but for 40 years. From 1932 to about 1972, they continued the experiment. Women were infected. Children were born with syphilis. Men died that didn't have to die. It was awful. And it wasn't until the early 1970s that this experiment was exposed and it was stopped. There was very little compensation for the families. There was compensation, but not enough for what they went through. That was horrible. But that was not a situation where men were injected with syphilis. These were men who already had it, about 400, and they were just not treated. They were not treated. They were not infected with syphilis. Now look at where we are with COVID. The federal government is saying, we know that minorities, particularly black and brown people, have three times more likelihood to be hospitalized or three times more likely to die from COVID. So we're going to make an effort to make sure you're vaccinated. And they're making the push. I mean, I have to give the Biden administration credit. They're making every effort they can to make sure that minorities are vaccinated because of the increased risk of hospitalization and increased risk of death. So this is a situation where the government is saying, we want to treat you. We're not excluding you. We're including you in the process. And we want to treat you to prevent you from getting COVID. So in my opinion, when you get vaccinated, you are honoring those men who were in the Tuskegee experiment who did not have an opportunity to be treated. You're honoring them by being vaccinated. If you choose not to get vaccinated, to me, you're dishonoring them. This is an opportunity for the government to make up for some of the sins of the past. And by not getting vaccinated, you're dishonoring their memory, in my opinion. Now, you may disagree. That's fine. But those are the facts. So everyone who's eligible needs to be vaccinated. The final thing I'll say is this, is that we are in a, you know, high demand and low supply environment right now. And I know it's very difficult for a lot of people who are pins and needles wanting to be vaccinated. But I can guarantee you, well, guarantee is a strong word. I think Joe Namath guaranteed a Super Bowl, but he won. So I'm going to guarantee you. I'm going to guarantee you that within the next 60 days, we're going to have more vaccine than we can actually distribute. I'll make that guarantee. And why do I say that? Well, you know, in my previous career, before I went to medical school, I was a pharmaceutical rep with Merck, which was, at the time, was the largest pharmaceutical company in the world. And I can tell you this, that pharmaceutical companies know how to roll out product. And once they have the system set up and the methodology done, they will crank out this vaccine. So we're going to go from having a shortage of vaccine to having tens of millions to even 100 million doses ready to go. And I just hope the government, the federal government, is ready. I hope that state government is ready. I hope that by this time a little light bulb goes off and they realize they need to go ahead and make sure that physicians like me have access to vaccines that I can give it to my patients. And why, again? All the skepticism that's out there, if a patient is with me, I can convince them and vaccinate them. All the conspiracy theories that are out there, if a patient comes up with some weird conspiracy theories, I can debunk it and vaccinate them right there on the spot. So that, to me, is also of great value as to why PCPs, or primary care providers, to include nurse practitioners and physician assistants, should be involved in vaccinating America. Well, that's my two cents for the day. I hope it was informative. I mean, that's the whole reason I do these podcasts, because, you know, what I'm discussing, you're not going to hear on television, you're not going to hear on radio. And I hope it has value in your life. And do whatever you need to do to get vaccinated, that we can all go on with our lives. Thanks for joining me on this latest episode of A Dose of the Healthy Truth with Dr. Cecil Bennett Podcast. Hope to hear from you soon.
Thanks for joining us for A Dose of the Healthy Truth podcast with Dr. Cecil Bennett. Learn more about this podcast and other episodes at cecilbennettmd.com.